The Baudelaire orphans were in the belly of the beast, that is, in the dark and cramped trunk of a long black automobile. Unless you are a small portable object, you probably prefer to sit in a seat when you are travelling by automobile, so you can lean back against the upholstery, look out the window at the scenery going by, and feel safe and secure, with a seatbelt fastened low and tight across your lap. But the Baudelaires could not lean back, and their bodies were aching from squishing up against one another for several hours. They had no window to look out of, only a few bullet holes in the trunk made from some violent encounter I have not found the courage to research. And they felt anything but safe and secure as they thought about the other passengers in the car and tried to imagine where they were going. The driver of the automobile was a man named Count Olaf, a wicked person with one eyebrow instead of two and a greedy desire for money instead of respect for other people. The Baudelaires had first met Count Olaf after receiving the news that their parents had been killed in a terrible fire, and had soon discovered he was only interested in the enormous fortune their mother and father had left behind. With unceasing determination, a phrase which here means no matter where the three children went, Count Olaf had pursued them, trying one dastardly technique after another to get his hands on their fortune. So far, he had been unsuccessful, although he'd had plenty of help from his girlfriend, Esme Squaller, an equally wicked, if more fashionable, person, who was now sitting beside him in the front seat of the automobile, and an assortment of assistants, including a bald man with an enormous nose, two women who liked to wear white powder all over their faces, and a nasty man who had hooks instead of hands. All of these people were sitting in the back of the automobile, where the children could sometimes hear them speaking over the roar of the engine and the sounds of the road. One would think, with such a wretched crew as travelling companions, that the Baudelaire siblings would have found some other way to travel rather than sneaking into the trunk. But the three children had been fleeing from circumstances even more frightening and dangerous than Olaf and his assistants, and there had been no time to be choosy. But as their journey wore on, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny grew more and more worried about their situation. The sunlight coming in through the bullet holes faded to evening, and the road beneath them turned bumpy and rough, and the Baudelaire orphans tried to imagine where it was they were going and what would happen when they got there.
"Are we there yet?"
The voice of the hook-handed man broke a long silence.
"I told you not to ask me that any more," replied Olaf with a snarl. "We'll get there when we get there, and that is that."
"Could we possibly make a short stop?" asked one of the white-faced women. "I noticed a sign for a rest station in a few miles."
"We don't have time to stop anywhere," Olaf said sharply. "If you needed to use the bathroom, you should have gone before we left."
"But the hospital was on fire," the woman whined.
"Yes, let's stop," said the bald man. "We haven't had anything to eat since lunch, and my stomach is grumbling."
"We can't stop," Esme said. "There are no restaurants out here in the hinterlands that are inns."